This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home. It's Thursday today. It's been a good week. It's been a little bit of a crazy week. Oh, little things here and there. Lots of little details to take care of. But all in all, it's been a good week. We've been able to get some things done and bring some things in. I've still got a few outstanding items on my list of things to do for this week, but you know, it's not too bad. It's not too bad. We'll see if we can get the rest of this finished up. Our old van is officially gone now. We did that today. We got the pick and pull to come pick it up. And we had a little bit of a miscommunication, but we got it done. So then my wife went to get her license plates on her new van. And the inspection that the car place did was 60 days ago and 4 days. And it's only good for 60 days. So she's going to have to get the van re-inspected and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So there's a bunch of little stuff. You know, it's fine. It's fine. Sometimes life goes along like this. We had kind of a little interesting scare / oddity at the Little Rock House. Our people who are staying there had texted me and said, say, when we got home, there was kind of like this rotten egg smell in the house. And I'm like, whoa, wait a minute, because that house runs on propane. And they said they, you know, maybe didn't notice it quite as much in the morning. And so then we didn't know. And then got the heating and cooling guy out there. He says there's nothing wrong with the furnace. All the pressure's good. He said, but I walked outside and he said, around the propane tank, I'm smelling a lot of propane smell. Uh-oh. So then I call Titan Propane. We get Titan Propane out there. They're looking around, checking for gas leaks. Our people who are staying in the Rock House sent me a picture of the guy checking for gas leaks, holding a lit cigar behind his back. Okay, so apparently he has plenty of experience and he knows that this thing isn't going to light up, and it's probably not going to light up, but you know, us civilians, we look at something like that and go, should you really be smoking a cigar while you're checking for propane gas leaks? Couldn't find any propane gas leaks. However, he did find that the sewer line, septic tank line cleanup had been busted off and busted off down in the ground, and so the open sewer pipe coming out of the house was venting. So that means it's methane, not propane, but you know, it's kind of hard to tell the difference sometimes. So we had two service calls there, but we eventually found the problem, so now I have a call into the plumbers to try to get the plumbers out there. They may have to backhoe up that section. And turns out we found out what happened. I got an apology today. We will say from individuals unnamed said, I think I broke your sewer pipe. You know, this stuff happens. So we got that under control, we think. I mean, it's still stinking down there, but we're going to get the plumbers out there as soon as possible to get that fixed. So we get that fixed. That's exciting. Then, along with the rest of it, this week, I've been doing final touches, final re-engineerings on the ugly Christmas outfit. That's tomorrow. This should be interesting. My wife is still shaking her head at me when she sees me in the outfit. Can't believe I'm going out of the house looking that way. And I've sort of been warning people, trying to warn people and tell them, look, this is going to be ridiculous. This is just ridiculous. And there's some people who have not seen the movie, A Christmas Story, because The Ugly Outfit is based on A Christmas Story, the movie. And I've just had to tell them, okay, well, it's not going to make any sense at all. All right? It's just not going to make any sense at all. Sorry. So this should be interesting. Yeah. So we'll see. My wife suggested that I write the guy I'm having breakfast with tomorrow morning, and she said, you know, you should really let him know what's coming. And so I wrote him. I have good friends. I have amazing friends. And so I wrote him and said, hey, I said, my wife suggested that I write you and let you know that it's ugly Christmas sweater day tomorrow, and it's actually ugly outfit day, and, you know, it's going to be something bizarre because it's going to be based on the movie A Christmas Story. So it's going to be bizarre. And so he wrote me back and he said, breakfast is not for the faint. I'm all in, sir. Looking forward to it. See you there. yeah, I have good friends. I just have good friends. So anyways, but that's at 6 o'clock because he has to get into work. And so that's at 6 o'clock, and it takes the better part of an hour to get into this getup with all the layers and everything else. So that means I need to at least be getting dressed at 4:45. I need to start getting dressed. And, you know, there's the morning oblations that you have to take care of. So that probably means I'm setting my alarm for 4:30. I'll probably take a shower tonight, get that out of the way. And then tomorrow at 4:30, I'll crawl out of bed, do my morning oblations, and start getting dressed. So, oh man, I think it'll be fine. I think, hopefully, there will be much laughter, hopefully, which is the whole point of all of this. So, we'll see. If there isn't, you know, that'll be okay, too. It'll be all right. People will just think I'm weird, but, you know, people have thought I'm weird most of my life, so that's okay. The writing has actually been on hold this week. In fact, the writing has been on hold, yeah, for a full week. I did some writing, finished up some things over the weekend, but where I would normally start my read-through on Sunday, I had enough to get done that I wanted to get squared away and all that sort of thing, that I didn't start that Monday. I did a full run through with the costume, got everything on, quickly discovered that I had a couple of engineering points that were not going to work. And so I scheduled to fix those Tuesday night. I got those fixed actually Tuesday morning, and then Tuesday night we had the church, staff Christmas party, and so that pretty much chewed up all of Tuesday night, finished up on a few little things Tuesday night, and then last night, I tried another run through with everything, and everything seems to be fine. I've got one more little possible thing, but I think I'm just going to try that tomorrow morning, and if it works, great, and if it doesn't work, that's okay too. But yeah, I think I'm ready to go. I can't sit down in this outfit, so I have to like take off a piece of it in order to sit down, which I'm going to have to do when I have breakfast. But that's okay. You know, I can put it back on afterwards. And I can't wear the shoes for long, one shoe in particular for long. But you know, I can take that off and put that back on too, as well. So we'll see how this goes. I mean, there is a part of me that is a bit amazed that I actually got to this point, because when I started this thing based on A Christmas Story, I mean, I figured out that I wanted to do it, and I've told the story before about my son-in-law. Because the standard response when I tell someone that I'm doing an ugly sweater outfit or an ugly outfit based on A Christmas Story, the standard response is, are you going to do the leg lamp? because anyone who has seen the movie A Christmas Story remembers the leg lamp. And so you really, you can't do it unless you're going to do the leg lamp. And I might have considered more thoroughly not doing an ugly Christmas outfit based on A Christmas Story if it had just been up to me to decide whether or not I was going to do the leg lamp. But when I talked to my son-in-law about it and I mentioned that I was thinking about doing A Christmas Story, he immediately popped off with, "Are you going to do the leg lamp?" And and it was just such an easy opportunity for me to rib him a bit that I just looked at him and I said, "You know, that's a great idea. That is a great idea." And he looked at me and narrowed his eyes. He said, "You thought of that already?" I said, "You know, that is a great idea. I think I'm going to tell everyone that the pastor of our church said I should do the leg lamp." And he just looked at me. So then the die was cast. I mean, the die was cast. So I did a little sketch, figured out what I wanted to do. And so I've been on and off now for months working on this thing. And this is the most complicated thing I've done. And, you know, yada, yada, yada. I've talked about this before. So tomorrow's the day. Tomorrow is the day. And I've prepped a bunch of people for it. I was talking to a friend today and reminding her, yeah, it's pretty bizarre, it's coming. She said, "Well, I like that you're giving us previews now." or she said something, "I think it's fun that you're giving us previews now." I said, "Well, this one. So, anyways, it'll be fine, I think. Oh, man. Yeah. So, all is well. All is well. I actually got a chance to talk to my friend that we had a moment where I mentioned that with the Dear Santa letter week, that we had a moment where she laughed and laughed and laughed, and I got a chance to talk with her today. And I said, "Yeah, we had a moment." She said, "We did have a moment." And she expressed again how much she needed that and how much she enjoyed it and how it was just at the right time for her. And you know, that's an amazing thing. When all the pieces come together and you have a moment together, and you're gonna have that for all eternity. I mean, that will be a memory that we will carry together for all of eternity. Of joy. And that's cool. That's really, really cool. So it's worth all of the strange looks and all of the wonderments by people and all the potential criticism, because it's a moment and it's worth doing. So anyways, all is well. I have a little I just saw a van that looked like our new van, and I happened to think, apparently I have a little other engineering I have to do, because 2011 Toyota Siennas and apparently other Toyotas within that time frame, apparently there's a problem with their fuel doors. Like, the hinge mechanism has a tendency to break, and when it breaks, it has the potential of being like a $350 fix that's not covered under warranty, because you have to get a new fuel door and put it on, but then it's the wrong color, so then you have to have it painted, and the problem is one of the hinges, when it breaks, then it doesn't depress the button on the fuel door, so it doesn't know that the fuel door is closed, and so then the motorized door won't open on the side. So I'm gonna have to see if I can come up with some fancy smanchy engineering that maybe does this for less money, because I can't really justify $350 by the time we get the fuel door in and they paint it and get all that done and match it and then potentially not have it matched correctly. And, you know, I mean, I've got a door that's already perfectly matched to that. I just have to figure out how to... It's going to be interesting, but I'll work on it. I'll work on it. We'll see what we have to do. I may have to physically manufacture a part in order to get this done. But anyways, so that's that. You know, little challenges in life, but that's okay. That's all right. Keeps life interesting. So this week, I had come across a documentary on Amazon.com, on Prime, called One Child Nation. And it was a documentary on the one-child policy in China that was begun, I believe, in 1979 and then revoked in 2015. I think that's correct, 1979 to 2015. And what had happened was China was looking at their population numbers. The government got spooked. And the government decided that all families should just have one child. That the fate of the nation was at stake. Everybody should just have one child. And it's really amazing the deeper we got into the documentary. What a totalitarian regime can do if its populace is used to being submissive. It's just, I mean, we look back on it now and you watch the documentary and you think, what? Why? What? But for a nation like China that has been under strict authoritarian rule for a long time, they can actually put out edicts and then put out propaganda and get some people to go along. And then, for the other people who don't want to go along, they can send out their minions to make them go along. Now, there are some really interesting things at this point going on in China in terms of birth rates. And we've talked about birth rates like in Japan and those kind of things. Those same things are echoed in China. What's interesting is that when the government decided they were going to start curbing the population, the birth rates were already in decline. So the mechanisms that we've already talked about, that when the anxiety level drops, you know, when there's more prosperity, the birth rate tends to drop too, those mechanisms were already in play. And you can look at the birth rate in China and you can see it's already starting to drop fairly rapidly when the government puts in this new edict in 1979 and says, now you're only going to have one child. And they put out all the propaganda. This is for the health of the country. One child only. Yada, yada, yada. And not only do they do that, then they start enforcing this. Well, if you fast forward now, China actually has a problem. Because its population is aging, because there was such a drastic drop, just not only naturally, but because of the enforcement, there was such a drastic drop in the birth rate that now the population is shifting to an aging population, which is going to age out, be less productive, and you're going to have a smaller workforce. And that smaller workforce is going to have to supply the money to help take care of the aging population. And so it's the same type of problems that you're looking at in Japan, that you're looking at in the United States, where the aging population is not productive, the younger people are, And now you have a load on society of taking care of the older people. And it's interesting, and I'll get into the reasons for this as well, but one of the side effects of this population of this one-child policy was that there's an estimated 30 million bachelors in China who can't find spouses to get married. And beyond that, the young people who do exist, they're not that interested, many of them, in having children because of the financial burden. But also, I found an article, and I'm just going to summarize because sometimes I just talk forever and these get way too long. So I'm just going to talk. Because in the article, they talk about the fact that openly, some of the young people are saying, you know what, children are really expensive. Just a second, I'm getting my mail. Children are really expensive, and we don't have childcare, and. But one of the things that they've wondered about in one of the articles I was reading was, you know, it also perhaps could be that when you have a one-child policy, families are very protective of that child. They raise that child differently than you would raise a multi-children family. Those children, you know, are going to kind of fend for themselves a little bit more. And so the article was saying, you know, it could be that in a one-child family, that child is used to being the center of attention, and potentially then wants to continue that. And of course, when you have children, you're not really the center of attention anymore, because the children have to have your focus and dedication and all those things. As Jordan Peterson says, you know, when you get married, it's all about the kids. So China now is facing a birth rate that's optimistically 1.8 per family, which is not enough to sustain the population. But I was reading another article that was just recently published, and they said the articles report an unconfirmed figure that as of November 17th, a mere 10.16 million babies had been born in the country this year. With just over 1 month left this year, this would mean that the total births of the year would be about 11 million. That would be a sharp drop from 15.23 million births in 2018 and 17.23 million births in 2017. So it appears that the birth rate is still going down in China, for a variety of reasons. And the number of girls that are moving into childbearing age is actually dropping as well, because of a side effect that is the same as the side effect of having 30 million bachelors who can't find a wife. And that side effect is, unfortunately, wrongly, in China, a boy is considered more valuable than a girl. And so if you're going to limit families to just one child, then what can happen, and what probably did happen quite a bit because of this 30 million man surplus, is that if you had a baby girl, you arranged not to have a baby girl one way or another, and then you tried again so that you could have a baby boy. And in that skew, you end up with too many boys. And frankly, you know, when it comes to reproduction and childbirth, there is no way that a man, is as valuable as a woman. And so now you've kind of got this double impact, well, triple impact of the birth rate was already going down. And now you've artificially forced it down. And because of the way that you artificially forced it down, you have less women who are even of childbearing age to begin with. Never mind that the government has been extremely heavy-handed in the way they went about that. And so now China has tried to turn on its propaganda machine and tell people, happy families have 2 to 3 children, you should have more. And, you know, the young people, a lot of them are just not having it. Because they grew up under this one child policy and they knew what China had done. So this is going to be really fascinating to watch, because China, with its manufacturing base, relies on having lots of workers, lots of able-bodied workers. But the government, in being as heavy-handed as they were, has created what may end up being a crisis situation in China. And I do not use the term heavy-handed lightly, because I think of all the statistics that are in the documentary, and I went out and looked it up and did some research, and it seems to be true. The statistics that were thrown around in terms of the number of abortions, in terms of the number of forced abortions, were astonishing. They were talking to women who were commissioned by the government to go and ensure that there was only one child per family. And when they would find out that the wife was pregnant, they would go and they would grab the woman and drag her off to these abortionists, and the abortionists would forcibly abort these babies, which is that. So in this documentary, the interviewer asks some of these women, so how many abortions do you think you did? And they claim to have kept track, although their range seems really wide to keep track. I think one of them said it was 30,000 to 40,000 abortions they had done. Another one said 50,000 or 60,000. I mean, those numbers are just seem incomprehensible that one person did that many. But the whatever it is, Ministry of Health or something like that in China, has actually released the statistic that over the years of the one-child policy in China, that there were 336 million abortions. And probably a non-trivial percentage of those were forced abortions. You know, and this is the kind of thing that can happen when you don't have a government where there's checks and balances, and that government gets spooked. So it's really something to ponder. And I realize that we've got all kinds of weirdness going on right now in this nation. I realize that there's a lot of people that are unhappy about a lot of things. But I think we can be grateful that our government and governmental structures do not have sufficient power to where they can send people into our homes to take pregnant women and tie them up and drag them off and do forcible abortions on them. So we should be grateful that we live in the United States of America. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.